Hey guys, it's me, Tim.
And me, Camille. And these people you hear in the background, just a couple hundred of our friends.
Yeah, it's right before our very first live storytelling event. People are just kind of walking around talking to each other. And we held this event just a couple of weeks ago.
We did. It was a ton of fun. And if you've been listening to this show, you know we spent a while putting this event together. We had help from the Herb Arts Organization and Second Tuesday Storytelling Group. They're both here in St. Louis.
And the whole night was a ton of fun. We had lots and lots of people come out and brave the July heat. It was super hot that night. We had so many people, we had to turn them away. They were listening through the glass outside the building. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was the bouncer. You left me at the front door.
It's true, but I was running the soundboard. The whole night had kind of like the right amount of DIY, you know what I mean? Where it was sort of, it felt very organic.
Very organic. It was really magical. It was really magical. And we also heard from 8 awesome storytellers under the theme, I Live Here.
So on today's episode, we're bringing you just a few of the stories we heard, kind of a teaser, if you will. And if you want to listen to the entire show, you can find it at our website, which is welivehere.show.
And we also have a bunch of photos and video from the event as well, so go check it out. But first, you might want to grab a notepad.
Because you might have a quiz at the end of it.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring
race,
class,
power,
poverty,
systems and the people they touch.
I'm Camille Stanley.
And I'm Tim Lloyd. And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Another event, we had the opportunity to meet a bunch of different people, scientists and poets and moms and chess players.
And they all brought us really interesting and sometimes very, very personal stories about race, class, power, and poverty. But the story we picked to open the event comes from a local educator.
How's everybody doing tonight? My name is Sunny Hutton, also known as Miss Hutton, your kid's favorite school teacher and soon to be yours.
So she sounds fun.
Yeah, totally. And she's the woman at the very beginning of the show who brought up this whole idea of a quiz. Turns out she was not joking.
So I'm going to do this piece. And throughout this time, I want you to be thinking about this question. What childhood memories come to your mind when you hear this piece? And if this story doesn't really resonate with you, if it's not a shared experience, just think about the images that pop up. And I'm going to call on you right there in the back. So be ready. My eyes shoot open to the sour smell of my cousin's feet. I just hate when my cousins come over. Auntie and uncle had a disagreement. My mom just told us that to put us back to bed as she frantically tried to caress our childlike views of the world. But through ears to glass, glass jars to walls, I clearly heard that disagreements involve mad men with intentions to break faces like glass. In my life, childlike swiftly became a pastime, no standardized, my views graduated to adult strife. Money, plans, education, networks, you lack those at birth. Bills, get as many as you can, your first bill by the age of 10. The system is cast, and you were cast as the poor kid. You didn't even audition. Don't answer the phone. It's not a callback. Just payday loans and they want their money back. Who got time to say I love you when you're gasping for breath? Submerge in debts in the depths of your own mental instability. You didn't know how to make relationships healthy, feed it vegetables. No, your food stamps couldn't afford produce, so you fed it box pasta and frozen processed foods. Your relationships reproduce yells that spike your blood pressure, hits that heighten your cholesterol. These unhealthy relationships will soon be your downfall. The next morning, the smell of bacon masked the acidity of my cousin's feet. I brusquely kicked out of the bunk bed to race my brothers to the kitchen. Uh-oh, there's mom standing, waiting to give her meal speech. There are more people in the house, so don't be greedy. From 7 to 11 people in the house, how was I supposed to try to be even less greedy? I think they call that hungry, but that was the norm for my poor family. A macro system of alleged superiority subjected your family to a life sentencing, yet the women labored unequivocally, serving as symbols of sacrifice, trademarks of tenacity. My community would not exist without the extensive strength my mommy possessed. She gave rise to leaders of a certain kind. Even through mass extinctions, there's been one organism that has always survived. No matter the conditions it adapted despite, an earth unfit to support life, volcanic eruptions, and the age of ice, you are that population and that community. Continue to flourish through your purpose and work, and then more leaders we shall birth. But in my life, childlike swiftly became a pastime, no standardized. My views graduated to adult strife.
So at the end of her story, Sunny follows up with her promise of a quiz.
I mean, she is a teacher, after all.
Right. And if you want to hear some of that back and forth between her and the audience, go to our website, welivehere.show, again, to listen to the entire event.
But better yet, you could go on Twitter and tell us your answer to that question. What childhood memories came up when you listened to Sunny's story?
Our Twitter handle is @welivehere_STL.
You know, like we were talking at the beginning of the show, this entire storytelling event went under the overarching theme of I Live Here.
And don't roll your eyes, guys. It wasn't just a sly pat on the back or a riff on our name. The idea actually came from our friend and colleague, Duri Buscarin.
And you guys know Duri because she's our health reporter here at St. Louis Public Radio, and she's been on the show a whole bunch, most recently talking about a very serious topic, gun violence.
So Duri and I were brainstorming about the storytelling event, and she suggested asking people to share times when they felt like they belonged. So we ran with it, and this theme, figuring out where you belong and where you don't belong, ran strong through a story from another teacher by the name of Harlan Hodge.
So Harlan is this mild-mannered guy, and he's spent years teaching St. Louis kids leadership skills. He also teaches chess, which is how Harlan earned the nickname Coach. And even though he claims to have this kind of shy persona, under the lights and with a microphone in hand, he is a master storyteller.
All right, so is anybody from St. Louis? Anybody? Okay, all right, good, good. Anybody familiar with University City? Yeah. Okay, so you know where Olive and 82nd Street is? Used to be a little 7-Eleven right there. Well, my first house was right in that little neighborhood on a street called Fullerton, and it was really the first place that we left. As a matter of fact, it was heart-wrenching because just about two blocks away from our house was the house store. It was Miss Johnson's candy store, and Miss Johnson, she let me work for her and sell Chico sticks and those little non-laters, and she actually paid me with Chico sticks and non-laters. But we left that wonderful neighborhood, and then we found ourselves in, anybody know about East St. Louis? Oh, good, good, and they said that positively, great. Know where State Street and 26th Street is? Yeah, so there's a really cool, like, candy store, like, right there. It's called Moto's. It's the best ever. They sell great, like, pickles and stuff like that. And we lived on 26th Street. And it was wonderful because we only had to walk a block or two to get to the candy store. But then we moved again over to 43rd and Buncombe. And we had to take like a 2 or 3 block walk to get to this candy store. And then we were on 51st and Forest in East St. Louis. And then Pennsylvania Avenue, right there down the street from Catherine Dunham. Well, right next to Catherine Dunham's place is a candy house. It was really nice. It was just a couple of houses down. But what really was great was when we moved back across the river, right, to a little spot that's not too far from here. Antique Row, you guys familiar with that area? Cherokee, right? Cherokee in Illinois. It's a beautiful place. It's a two-family house, all brick. For the first time, we had a basement with washing machines and a backyard. And, you know, something about moving, we moved about 10 times before I graduated from high school, but this was the one. When you move that much, you sort of don't totally unpack, right? You always got things in boxes and you're always ready for the next move, so you never totally unpack. And then you never really hang stuff on the walls because that's a hassle when you're trying to move the next time to take all the stuff. Now you gotta do stuff to the walls, you won't get your deposit back. You know, no. But this place, I was sure we were gonna totally unpack and hang stuff on the walls because we were at Illinois and Cherokee. And if you know the area, you know that there was an ice cream shop right there on the corner. So this was our spot. So my brother and I, he's about 2 years older than me. We're going to seventh and ninth grade. And my mother's a bus driver. She drives for what I call the DSEG experience, or the DSEG experiment. And so she told us, she said, hey, listen, now that we live over on this side, you got your choice. You could go to the neighborhood school, which we were like accustomed to going to neighborhood schools, or you could get into this thing called the DSEG program. Voluntary transfer program where you get to choose one of these fabulous white schools in St. Louis County where they've got all this stuff, right? And you get to ride a bus to school. I was like, bet. You don't have to walk to school, get on a bus. But she brought up this concept that we didn't know much about, like integration and segregation. If you use all these words, and we didn't know. Because in East St. Louis, there was no integration. It was just like black kids and one white kid. There's one, his name was Benjamin. Benjamin the white kid. So we were like, cool. So we signed up. We're going to the school. And now we're starting school on Monday. But on Saturday, it was time to kind of find our way around the neighborhood. My brother and I, we got bicycles. You know when you're like 12, 11 years old, like that's your freedom. That's how you found people. You got on your bike and you rode. And so we were like, okay, mission today, find kids. So we jumped on our bikes and we're riding around the south side, right? And we're looking for kids. We're riding and there weren't any kids around. So it was like we were riding for like a half an hour and then kid turns out like 2 weeks. And we finally come up on this porch. We see these kids over here and they're on this porch. There's about 15 of them. That was great. That's it. That's what we're looking for, right? And so we turn and we're riding our bikes on the street and we slow down a little bit because you don't just ride up to somebody's house. You got to wait to be invited, right? And so we look at them and they look at us. And we're waiting for our invitation, waiting on them to say, hey, come on over. And they didn't say that. One of them yelled out, go home, niggas. And I started thinking to myself, did they know we just moved over here from East St. Louis? And what was home? I was like, was it the place over in U City with the Olive? And was it East St. Louis? What was home? And while I'm thinking through all of this stuff, and thinking about how crazy is that comment now? It seemed a little dated. While I'm in my mind thinking about this stuff, cruising along, my brother yells out, look, y'all honkies. And I was like, dude, why did you say that? That ain't right. And then at that very moment, one of the racial myths that I had was totally dispelled. White people actually can run. 15 white kids rush off at his porch and they're chasing us down the street towards Arsenal. And we're on our bikes and we're riding. I'm like, wow, these dudes are fast. And we're moving fast. One of the guys caught me and grabbed me by my shirt, pulled me off my bike right at Arsenal and Jefferson. And so my brother and I, we jump off our bike and we're fighting with these kids in the middle of Arsenal and Jefferson. About 15 kids. Now, we grew up in East St. Louis, so we're tough, so we're fighting and swinging. People are saying all this stuff. But in the moment, it sort of like slowed down, and I'm realizing all this stuff is happening, and we're in the middle of a major intersection. Surely, somebody is going to break this up. So the cars would pull up, slow down, and then go right around us. And keep going. I was like, that's jacked up. So we're fighting, and it seems like it's going on forever. And then the second wave of kids start coming. And we were like, okay, so we can handle about 12, 15, but we can't handle about 20, right? And so my brother and I, we jumped on our bikes, we grabbed our bikes, and we were riding off, and then they started throwing bricks and rocks and sticks. And that's when we really got hurt. You know, I got hit by a bottle, my brother got hit by a brick, but it wasn't bad enough to tell our mom. So we went home, we hid, you know, scars or whatever, and we didn't say anything. And there were two thoughts that I remember very clearly. It's Saturday, and we start school on Monday with white kids who want us to go home. And the second thought was, we ain't hanging no damn pictures. So we go to school on Monday, and I'm ready to fight. Whole bus ride. We're up at 5:30 in the morning on the bus going out to school. And when we get there, I'm totally surprised. All the kids and all the teachers, just like my kid, the kids, friends, and teachers in East St. Louis and University City that we know. Teachers love us. They are the same. Teachers are the same wherever you go. They just want you to learn and produce. They want to inspire you. And kids are just friends. It was curious, right? But there is something very different about this school. They do all these leadership programs. Like, white folks were really into leadership in the 90s. And so they pulled me into all of these leadership programs, and I'm doing these stuff. They're riding bikes down the Katy Trail for 2 days. I'm like, who's got a bike trail for 2 days long? And we're canoeing down the Merrimack. I was like, this is crazy. I remember that all the white kids were putting on suntan lotion. I'm black, I don't need no suntan lotions. 2 days later, my skin is, I'm like, give me that suntan lotion. And so we're doing all these leadership programs, we're hiking and doing chess and doing all this stuff. And I remember one night, it was a dark night, we were hiking through the woods and we're sitting around and having this conversation. And we're talking about the places where we live. And one of my friends, Eric, he said, a white kid from out in the county, he said, tell me where you live. I said, well, do you know University City where Olive and 82nd Street right there by the candy place? Oh, do you know about, okay, so I grew up in East St. Louis over at 26th Street, right down the street from Moto's where they sell the pickles and stuff. And I stayed over here on the south side, and then I stay over here. And he said, hard, stop. Dude, why do you keep saying stay? Like you live in a hotel or something. I said, well, actually, you know, we're Grand and Marcus, that's, I say, in the hotel right there. But what it really did was it made me reflect upon this concept of staying. I was like, why do I say that? Why I stayed all over this region, right? And it struck me. I said, you know what? That's not the language that I want to use. And so fast forward 20-something years, my wife and I live in Pasadena Hills in the Normandy School District now. And I actually take kids out in the middle of the woods, drop them there, and make them hike for 22 days. And I play chess like Miss Felice Sky said, and I teach kids chess. And I live in a neighborhood where my son gets to walk 2 blocks to the candy store. It's really cool. And so I've come to the conclusion that this is my city. All this different stuff that we do, all the places we go, all the places that we live, this is where we live, and this is my home. I'm at home. And I guess at the end of the day, I'm gonna stay here. Thanks, guys.
Now, we know a lot of you guys are listening to this show outside of St. Louis, and our last storyteller, Marilyn Sue Warren, is a transplant to St. Louis, just like both of us, Camille.
She was kind of the mother hen of our storytellers, mm-hmm. and she had everybody on the edge of their seats from the moment she got on stage and stepped up to the mic.
Bright lights and no country music, damn! You might be able to tell from my saying that I do not have Made in St. Louis on the bottom of my feet. So, let me tell you about my St. Louis journey. pure, unadulterated awesomeness, pleasure. Oh my God. It is January 1965. I am 19 years old, and I am right down in the middle of downtown St. Louis. Oh my God, the buildings are so tall. I am gazing at them in awe. Actually, I'm gawking. I know that. And people are passing me by, men in three-piece suits and shiny shoes, women in dresses and coats and hats to match. And nowhere, absolutely nowhere for hundreds of miles, are cotton fields to be worked, are rice or beans. And if God is good, maybe I will never have to pick cotton again. I am in love with this city. The hustle, the bustle, all the people. I am going to live here. I'm going to find a job. I'm going to find an apartment, and life will be good. I will bring my children up from Arkansas. A month goes by. And you know what? I'm 19, and I get a cold water flat, third floor walk-up on North 19th, right past Hyde Park. Get a job in a factory, bring my daughters, age 5 months and 2.5 years, up here. Life is perfect. I am my own boss. I am a woman, fully grown. No one can tell me what to do or criticize me. No one can tell me how to raise my children. There is just one small, nagging problem, and it is the colored. I ride the bus, and do you believe this? African-American colored people sit next to me. Totally unacceptable. I was not raised that way. So I do what only I can do based on my raising. I stand up, going back and forth and back and forth, and I begin to wonder, how long can I live here up north in Yankee land? Can I do this 40 years standing back and forth and back and forth? Or do I have to go back home again and pick cotton? A few months later, in the summer, the dilemma was solved. I went home for a long weekend, and my mother sent me on an errand across town. It was beginning to get slightly dark as I'm coming back. The sun was at that beautiful stage where it's kind of pink and all of that. And because it was hot and humid, the mimosas and the magnolias smelled so delicious and sweet. And I decided to take a shortcut through Colored Town. And as I'm going around a bend, there in front of me is a toddler playing in the front yard. And the toddler's mom is sitting on the steps watching. And I'm just noticing it and walking. And suddenly the toddler falls. When the toddler gets up, the knees are skinned and the toddler is bellowing. And mom comes running. And she picks that toddler up. And she holds that baby close to her heart. And she pats. And I thought, oh my God. She is just like me. When my daughter falls and skins her knees, that's exactly what I do. We are both human. We are one. We are alike. who sat by me from then on mattered not at all. A few years later, I went to nursing school. And when I got out of nursing school, like many new nurses, you get the midnight shift. Yeah, you do. And if you're thinking about nursing, you also have to work weekends and holidays. So anyway, I get a job at Lutheran Hospital down on South Jefferson. My first boss was a large African-American woman who took no guff, but took me under her wings and showed me the ropes. One night, probably about 5 a.m, she came to us and she said, so-and-so is having a birthday. Let's celebrate that birthday. We will all go to Uncle Bill's on South Kings Highway. Yes, we did. The whole integrated, motley, sleep-deprived crew of us. We walked into Uncle Bill's. We commandeered a table right smack in the middle of the restaurant. Jaws dropped open. Napkins fell. Silverware clanked. Curses were said under people's breaths, and fingers were raised. We sat there and we ate and we talked. And inside my head, I am scared and superior. I can do both of those really well. The scared part of me is, growing up where I was, if you were white and you hung out with African Americans, that was also a good way to get killed. So I'm wondering if, oh my God, can I make it to my car in the parking lot? And then the other part of me, the self-righteous Marilyn Sue, I have black friends. I am so cool. I'm not like them. Obviously made it through the parking lot, made it so that I could campaign for Barack Obama. Got to vote for him. Never thought I would live long enough to be able to vote for an African American. Got to do it not just once, but twice. So obviously, we are post-racial, right? We have done that, been there, and I've got the Obama t-shirt to prove it. 2013, his fabulous speech. My favorite lines were Second of Falls, Selma, and Stonewall. It was such a powerful one that I wrote a story about the campaign, about my own racism, about my journey. And I love the way that inauguration ended, because at the end of the inauguration, at the parade, the thing that caused tears to come to my eyes was the diverse marching band from Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, my home state, saluting our first African-American president. So I wrote the story. And I ended the story with a place called Hope. A couple of years later, I was invited to tell a story in Chicago. So as I'm coming out of the ballroom, I told the story, A Place Called Hope, because Chicago is the hometown of the president and first lady. As I come out of the hotel, I notice on the television screen, it is on silent, but I notice a yellow tarp on a street. And I remember that it had been there when I went into the ballroom. And as I go off to bed, I'm thinking, oh my God, what kind of atrocities is ISIS up to now? The next morning, of course, I found out that the body was that of Michael Brown. And it had lain in his street for hours. My illusion was shattered. We are not post-racial. race is still ever present in our lives. Because I have white privilege, I don't always see it, but I began to see it. And all fall, I'm a nurse. My patients, many of them live in Ferguson. And I would go back and forth to Ferguson weekly, sometimes more often than that. And I would hear and see protesters. And what is my piece? What do I need to do differently? And then one of the things that gave me a piece of hope in all of this despair was in 2014, the Cards won the pennant. I was in Ferguson the night they won the pennant. And let me tell you, this is what I heard. Hands up, don't shoot. Go, Cards, go. Hands up, don't shoot. Go, Cards, go. And I had my dream. My dream is that all of us, we live in Cardinal Nation. And if we work together, we can create a climate where each and every one of us gets a turn at bat and can aim for home. Thank you very much.
So if you like what you heard and you want more stories, you can find the entire event at our website, welivehere.show. We posted that and a bunch of other really cool stuff like photos and videos from the event. It's just really cool stuff.
It's really cool stuff and it's well worth your time. There are at least five more stories that you really want to hear.
So we've got a couple of big shout outs for this particular episode.
First up is Herb Arts, which focuses on youth and community development through the arts. We hooked up with them. In fact, let us use their space for the storytelling event. And Second Tuesdays, which is St. Louis's storytelling group, kind of like The Moth, and a bunch of colleagues here at St. Louis Public Radio who gave us support as we were putting this event together.
And thank you again to everybody who came out to the event. We're sorry we couldn't get everybody into the room, but it was a great night, and thank you for showing up. Now, we do have a programming note to make.
We do. So next month, the month of August, we're kind of taking a little summer vacation, guys. Well, not really a vacation, a break.
A break. A break from bringing you shows on a regular basis. Now, that said, we may stumble across something we're like, we just can't keep it to ourselves.
We gotta share
our
friends.
We gotta share with you guys.
So don't totally delete us from your podcast list. We'll be around, but we won't be bringing you next month the in-depth, long stories that you've come to expect from us. They're coming. We just need a little bit more time to produce them.
Right, and we'll be back full-time in September with the rest of Season 2 of We Live Here. If you want to listen to back episodes again, go find them wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. We Live Here is produced by me, Camille Stanley.
And me, Tim Lloyd.
Shula Newman is our editor.
Cassie Morgan composed our theme music.
But on this episode, we've also been jamming to another local favorite, the 442s.
Yeah, what do you say we just go ahead and let them play us out?
Yeah, and from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.